tat, that, vak, vocabulary, visarga, creation, janata, the people in general, agha, sins, viplavaha, revolutionary, yasmin, in which, prati shlokam, each and every stanza, abhudhvati, irregularly composed, api, in spite of, namani, transcendental names, etc., anusasva, of the unlimited Lord, yashaha, glories, ankitani, depicted, yat, what, shrinvanti, do hear, gayanti, do sing, grinanti, do accept, sadhavaha, purified men who are honest. Tadvag visargo janata kaviplavo. Yasmin pratishlokam abadhavatyapi. Namanyanantasya yaton kitaniyat. Srinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Yasmin pratishlokam abadhavatyapi. Namanyanantasya yashan kitaniyat. Srinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava.
Omkar Prabhu? Oh.
Tadbhag visargo janataga viplavo. Yasmin pratishlokam abadabhatyapi. Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat. Shrinvanti gayanti gananti sadhava. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Yasmin pratishlokam abadhavatyapi. Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat. Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Yasmin pratishlokam abadhavatyapi. Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat. Shrinvanti gayanti ginanti sadhava. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Yasmin pratishlokam abadhavatyapi. Yananyanantasya yashon kitaniyat. Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. Anyone else? Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Yasmin pratishlokam habadya vatyapi. Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyad. Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava.
Let's read the translation in unison, please. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, pastimes, etc. of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So before we read the purport, I'd like to take a moment and put this verse in context for those who are new to the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a chapter entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. So the author of the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva, was also the author of all the other Vedic literatures, as we've discussed, including the Puranas, the Mahabharata, and the original Veda itself, which he then divided into four. Thus, he's known as Vyas, or one who divides. So, Srila Vyasadeva had completed all of these literatures before writing Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we meet these sages gathering at Naimisharanya, worried about what's going to happen to the earth because Krishna has just left. So they appoint Suta Goswami as their leader and ask him many questions. This is the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, questions by the sages. So Suta answers their questions about the fate of mankind and the future of spirituality in the absence of Lord Krishna. And among his answers, he mentions Srimad Bhagavatam is the means by which people can maintain dharma even in this Kali Yuga age. So then the sages are curious and ask about Srimad Bhagavatam. How did it come to be written? So then Sutta begins the narration of the history of Bhagavatam, and he tells the story of Vyasadeva. Begins by saying Vyas was on the banks of the river, was it Godavari, I believe, in his hermitage, feeling very depressed. He felt unfulfilled, although he'd written all these literatures, and yet he was uncertain that he had done anything worthwhile. So, as is the case throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, whenever there's a great question, unresolved question, who appears? Narada Muni. Narada Muni is the guru of Vyasadeva. So the entire Bhagavatam is seen in one sense, as a glorification of Narada Muni by his disciple, Srila Vyasadeva. Because in every canto, whenever there's some difficult situation, there's Narada Muni. So here's the first appearance of Narada. And he comes before his disciple who's lamenting and disturbed and says, the reason you're unhappy is that you've not directly glorified Krishna in all of these literatures. So here in this section, he's speaking to Vyasadeva about the value of transcendental literature, purely dedicated to spiritual realization. So if you turn back one page, this verse kind of sets the table for today's verse. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. He poetically contrasts people who like ordinary mundane literature with crows, whereas those who like transcendental literature to be like swans. And he says basically birds of a feather don't flock together. So after that verse, he then speaks today. Those books which glorify Krishna exclusively revolutionize one's life. So let's read the purport here. Who would like to start? Ladies, this morning. Could we start with the gentleman and can our techie, our tech master, do we have a battery in hand?
With the wireless mics, you got to talk really close and talk loud too.
For the kitchen, okay. So, Gaurlila Prabhu, would you like to start? I mean, Mike, would you like to start there, please? Let's see if we can get that.
It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best even from the worst. It is said that the intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stalk of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place without exception. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying and Supreme Lord, because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, who will become sane in their transactions.
Thank you. Let's the next person, please.
While preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend China has attacked the border of India with a materialistic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field, yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God conscious, God fearing, pure hearted and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land, which is not very suitable for habitation. And certainly there is no cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. This is due not to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Systematically there is propaganda by the section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord.
Thank you. Next person.
Therefore, there is a great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world to do all the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart, and naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people in general are tools in the hands of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of the leaders only, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. We know that our honest attempt to prevent this great literature conveying transcendental messages for reviving God, for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general, and re-spiritualizing the world atmosphere, is fraught with many difficulties. Our presenting this matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there will be so many literary discrepancies despite our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of society will still accept this due to its being an honest attempt to glorify the Almighty God.
Thank you. Next person.
Who may be foreigners, and yet without knowing the language, the victims of the fire express themselves. And the neighbors understand the need, even though not expressed in the same language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast this transcendental message of the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, there will be success.
Okay, can we pass it over to the lady's side, please? Thank you.
When there are too many materialistic activities by the people in general all over the world, there is no wonder that a person or a nation attacks another person or nation on slight provocation. This is the rule of the age. This is the rule of this age of Kali or quarrel. The atmosphere is already polluted with corruption of all description, and everyone knows it well. There are so many unwanted literatures full of materialistic ideas of sense gratification. In many countries, there are bodies appointed by the state to detect and censor obscene literature. This means that neither the government nor the responsible leaders of the public want such literature, yet it is in the marketplace because the people want it for sense gratification. The people in general want to read. This is a natural instinct. But because their minds are polluted with want such literatures. Underneath the circumstances, transcendental literature like the Srimad Bhagavatam will not only diminish the activities of the corrupt mind of the people in general, but also it will supply food for the hankering after reading some interesting literature. In the beginning, they may not like it because one suffering from jhanas is reluctant to take sugar candy. But we should know that sugar candy is the only remedy for jhanas.
Similarly, let there be systematic propaganda for popularizing reading of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which will act like sugar candy for the jhanas-like condition of sense gratification. When men have a taste for this literature, the other literatures which are catering poison to society will then automatically cease. We are sure, therefore, that everyone in human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter.
Okay. So I'd like to ask you to think for a moment of the context. Prabhupada is writing this purport around 1963, and India and China are having a near all-out war over some mountains between their two countries in the Himalayas. Prabhupada is a lone, struggling mendicant, renunciate in Vrindavan. He is nearly 70 years old. He's undertaken this idea of publishing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which would take him, at the rate he was going, until take him about 60 years to finish. And yet he's enthusiastically carrying on doing the writing himself, as he mentions, in a foreign language, which he really doesn't know that well. So I just want to read you the last paragraph of this purport from the original edition, just to underscore this idea, how Prabhupada is saying very sincerely that even though it's full of faults, even though it's imperfectly presented, it will still act. We are sure, therefore, and you can compare this to the edited version, we are sure, therefore, that everyone in the human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faulty and broken linguistic technicalities, because it is recommended by such an authorized personality as Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared from this chapter. A very quaint English. So Srimad Bhagavatam is described here as revolutionizing the lives of misdirected people. Can anyone here who's been reading Bhagavatam for a while, would anyone like to comment on briefly on how it has revolutionized their life? Anyone? Tulsi Rani. Okay.
The Bhagavatam, by reading Bhagavatam every day, or almost every day, I see how it changes my perspective of the world that's around us, and it puts everything in a more realistic perspective. And when difficulties happen in life, because my intelligence has been trained by the Srimad Bhagavatam and by Srila Prabhupada's purports, it helps me to look at the world around me in a more sober mind and not be so disturbed.
Thank you. I'm sure there are many realizations on this point. And this idea of a revolution is something that appeals to people who are a little idealistic. There's an external revolution, also an internal revolution associated with Srimad Bhagavatam. The internal revolution is, as Tulsi is saying, it changes us in ways which really are unexpected, unimagined. Generally, if you set out to get a degree in college, for example, you know there's going to be a certain amount of work, and then you're going to get a certain result, right? It's pretty cut and dried. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, yes? You want to comment? Okay. We'll take a time out for another look here.
Thank you, Prabhu. I want to share a personal experience in answering Kalakanta Babu's question of how the Bhagavatam has changed my life. I had three children, and my youngest daughter died at 7 months of SIDS in my arms. One morning I went to get her, I picked her up, and my wife was off teaching, and I did the usual routine. She was in my arms. I put her down, and I actually saw her leave her body. She left. And without the understanding or the training that I received from Krishna consciousness, from Srila Prabhupada, I don't know how I could have understood and lived through that. So that experience helped me in dealing with a very, very critical situation in my life. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. A very similar statement to what Tulsi is saying, and a very vivid illustration. To be a devotee doesn't mean terrible things won't happen in our lives, but by the grace of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can deal with them in a much more intelligent way, right? When there's a tragedy, there is often so much uncertainty about how to respond. For example, one of my friends, Brahmatirtha Prabhu, had to attend a funeral. Young man, 42 years old, father, husband, respectable member of the community, just died abruptly and unexpectedly. So there is a big funeral, and as often happens at funerals, people were asked to speak in remembrance of this person. So Brahmatirtha was there, and he said, person after person, all they could say about this gentleman was what a great fan of the Gators he was. It was just like one person after another, oh, he was such a great fan of the Gators. That was the culmination of their realization on the occasion. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Gators, don't get me wrong. But Srimad Bhagavatam makes us saintly. This is the unexpected effect of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. It creates an internal revolution, whether or not we're aware of it. That internal revolution allows us to deal with difficulties in a much more sober way. That internal revolution awakens in us an awareness of the existence of other people on the spiritual platform. And that internal revolution also helps us see our faults, which is really scary, actually, but this is self-realization. You know, self-realization means to see all the things that are actually wrong with me, how arrogant I am, how insensitive I am, how self-centered I am, you know, and these are frightening realizations, you know. That no wonder we have so few people taking up Krishna consciousness, you know. So we'd get so much more business if we just said, you're God, come on in. So this is the revolution. It is self-realization. It shows us how what our real position actually is. And in the process, turns us into saintly people. That's on the micro scale. On the macro scale, if many people have this transformation, the change of heart, as Prabhupada describes, then what will the effect be on society? Even a small number of Christians in the early days of Christianity, in the second and third century A.D., made a huge change in the society they were in. At first, of course, they were lion food. Just to be a Christian meant you were condemned to death. But because they were determined in their faith and they were not intimidated by that persecution, they were finally allowed to function in society. And then, because of their outstanding character, they began getting more and more responsible posts in society, right? This is the history of Christianity. So it got to the point where the Christian people were so influential in society that the king finally made it the state religion, Constantine. So Prabhupada said the same thing about the revolution that comes from Krishna consciousness, from Srimad Bhagavatam. It is not by arguing and by defeating people philosophically. And if you study Srimad Bhagavatam, you will be able to slice and dice philosophical arguments. But it is by what that people are changed? Anyone remember from the Chaitanya Charitamrita? Not by philosophical arguments, it is by... It's by the behavior of the devotees, in a broad sense, right? It is not by logic and argument and debate, but by the behavior of the devotees that creates a revolution in society. So that is the effect of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Just for example, the devotees become inspired to share Krishna consciousness, having experienced that change of heart. And then it just tends to spread. I was just in Jacksonville this weekend, and two of our Krishna House graduates are there trying to start a temple just like in the old days, with very few resources and, you know, nothing established, but just going out and distributing books, meeting people. So they're telling me some of their adventures. Rasaraj and Amrita Kaili Prabhus. Amrita Kaili was talking to her next-door neighbor, just met the next-door neighbor, and she said, "My name's Amrita." And he said, "I remember you. A year ago, I met you on campus at UNF, and you talked to me for an hour about your philosophy. Do you have some of those books? I want those books." And then they went out to a mall to see if they could distribute some books there, but very dead, very quiet. But there's just one guy there, so they approached him. And he looked at the book, and he's like stunned. Looked at Prabhupada's picture, and he's stunned. He said, "I just got a book by this man. I was in San Diego last week, and I got a book by him, but I gave it away to my friend. I guess I should get another one." "Where are you guys from, anyway?" "So we're from Gainesville." "The guy I bought it from in San Diego is from Gainesville." So they're having all of these remarkable events. Not sure. Might have been David Krishna, we're not sure. Anyway, another story was something Tulsi Rani was involved in. She was there at UNF in Jacksonville and passing out flyers for a class. And she gave one to a young lady who said he was interested, and they were talking. And then this young lady mentioned that she had just sown some holy basil seeds, some Tulsi seeds that day. And Tulsi said, "Oh, that's amazing. My name is Tulsi." And anyway, one thing led to another. That young lady's now a devotee, living with the others in Jacksonville. She's doing her master's degree in botany, or in biology rather. And when she was introduced to Krishna consciousness, she was in the middle of a course called Advanced Evolution. So now she's also helping revolutionize the campus. So anyway, the point is that it's very exciting and adventurous to be in a revolution when you have a good cause. And this is Krishna consciousness. It starts with an internal change, and then it naturally manifests to an external change. That's not required to be a devotee, but it gives life to the experience. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, although he was a great scholar, Lord Chaitanya wrote only 8 verses. And in the first verse, it's called the Shikshastikam, he says, "Vidya vidhu jivanam." This Sankirtan movement, the spiritual revolution, is the life of all transcendental knowledge. The phrase he uses is "vidya vidhu jivanam." So jivanam means life, but vadhu means wife. Vidya means what? Anyone? Knowledge. So the spiritual revolution is the life and the wife of transcendental knowledge. So what does that mean? I discussed this with Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, one of my very educated godbrothers. And we were discussing that the wife enlivens the husband. See, the wife is meant to be the wind beneath the wings of the husband, the inspiration, the upliftment, the encouragement. So to have knowledge is one thing, but to have vidya vadhu, the wife of transcendental knowledge, this is Sankirtan, this is the revolution. This is sharing Krishna consciousness with others. Vidya vadhu jivanam, it brings it to life. In other words, it's not enough to just have the knowledge. This is the impersonalist idea. Because I know so much, therefore I am better than you. But the Vaishnava's idea is, I don't know anything, but you also don't know anything. So let's chant Hare Krishna. This vidya vidhu jivanam. So let's take a moment and go through this purport in a few highlights here. Prabhupada begins by explaining how even if something or someone is unqualified, they can be a source of help in our lives. This is a lesson from the great moralist Chanakya Pandit. He says that a learned person can take nectar even from a stock of poison, or gold even from a filthy place, or good instructions even from a low-class person, or a wife even from an obscure family. This is the symptom of an intelligent person. So Prabhupada begins his purport by referring to that. And then he says, but a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. These instructions apply even to an ordinary man. But a saint is always absorbed in glorifying the Lord, because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. Let me ask you all a question. Do you find Krishna House a sane environment? Don't answer all at once now.
Sane is relative.
Okay, relative, like in other words.
It's pretty sane compared to Dallas. It really is.
Okay. All right, well, how about life outside of the Krishna House in Gainesville? That's sort of what I'm referring to. First one. Shruti?
Compared to when I think about my family, my parents and everyone in India, and this place is so much more sane. I couldn't even live there for 2 weeks. I was counting every day, when will I be back in Krishna House?
What is the difference? How would you define sanity?
Well, the definition which comes to my mind all the time is insanity by Einstein is to do the same thing again and again and expect a different result. So this is practically what everyone has done, or everyone does. I've seen that practically, to be honest, with my family. They do the same thing again and again and again, and they expect a different result. So that is insanity. But over here, we try to change and revolutionize.
But we're doing the same thing again and again. We're saying the same mantras.
But we're not expecting a different
result. Yes, the result we're expecting is just Krishna consciousness. That's all. That's the difference, right? Yeah. In other words, insanity is expecting that one's going to be happy in material life. If we just had 1/10 of the faith that people have in materialism, in Krishna, how advanced we would be. Isn't it? I mean, people will do anything for sense gratification, just make huge sacrifices. Get up early in the morning, chug coffee, drive 50 miles, right? Buy this and buy that, just so certain this is going to make them happy. Ruin their health, ruin their families. Drinking, smoking, this is insanity. Things that make no sense, right? And it's going on all around us. So this is why Prabhupada makes this very strong statement. Srimad Bhagavatam will make people sane in their transactions. Then he explains about this war between China and India, which he considers very pointless and mad. What's the point in disturbing peace, which has existed for centuries, over some uninhabitable mountains? But, you know, when the ego becomes involved, then nothing else matters. There's another symptom of materialism. Because after you have money, and after you have material stuff, then the only thing remaining is you want to be famous. You want to be admired and acknowledged for such. See? So particularly men have this propensity. Sorry, guys, but, you know, we want to be the top dog. You want to be recognized as number one. Of all the countries, of all the planets in the universe, you know, Earth is the best. Of all the countries on Earth, America is the best. Of all the cities in America, my hometown is the best. Of all the neighborhoods in my hometown, my neighborhood's the best. Of all the houses in my neighborhood, my house is the best. Of all the families, my family's the best. And of all the people in my family. This is the mentality of insanity. So it manifests in these horrible ways, horrible wars. At any given time in the last century, there have been 8 to 10 armed conflicts going on somewhere in the world all the time. So Srimad Bhagavatam will make people sane in that we can be content with very little. You know, the one of the most pressing issues in the world today, of course, is the environment and using up all the resources of Earth. So devotee automatically becomes the most environmentally friendly person, right? Isn't it? Just by, not intentionally, just automatically, because first of all, we learn to eat lower on the food chain. We can be very satisfied there. And secondly, we come to realize, and this is especially one of the great side benefits of ashram life, you just don't really need much to be happy. You know, a few feet of space to lie down, a couple of simple meals, some nice associations, some purposeful activity, and life can be very sweet and enjoyable. Don't need to pile up a lot of material accumulations to be happy. So that's the insanity of materialism Prabhupada's referring to. Any comments on this, by the way? You know, this materialism is symptomatic of age of Kali, the age of quarrel. You say to somebody, it's the age of quarrel, and they'll say, no, it's not. What do you mean? You know? There is an atmosphere, polluted atmosphere. And therefore, Prabhupada says, a systematic propaganda by a section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. So this is a very strong statement, because you don't see this overtly, but covertly it's going on. For example, in my lifetime, the ability to pray, or the freedom to pray publicly in class, has been taken away. And the reason is that it is seen as a sectarian prayer, the Christian prayers, Christian-based prayers that were common in the schools when I was growing up. It was perfectly acceptable to make such expressions. You can't do that anymore in a public school. So this is due to a poor fund of knowledge because, as Prabhupada explains, it is important not only for the government to allow religious practice, but to encourage it, because that is what makes the character of the human being complete. One of the history professors here at UF, when he retired, wrote a book on this point, from a Christian point of view, but a very pointed book, about how the secularization of education has resulted in a declining moral character. Right. So even people outside of our association can recognize this phenomenon. For example, the university center over there next to the plaza where we distribute Krishna lunch, that was built as a church, but it's no longer used as a church. It's a secular auditorium because religion was removed from campus. See? So the problem with religion was, again, that it became sectarian, that my religion is right, your religion is wrong. So which religion do we practice in a government which allows freedom of religion? What Srila Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam is that it is not a matter of a sectarian faith or another. It is the principle of glorifying God that is integral to human development and education. If you separate that in the name of secularism, then people become debauchees. They become preoccupied with sex. They think that fun means to get intoxicated and abuse their bodies. They become cogs in an industrial military society just meant for producing things that will make our society stronger than the other society. See, our country is stronger than the other. So all of this is the result of godlessness. And Prabhupada says it is attributed to a systematic effort to eliminate glorifying God. I was remembering when Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was 22 years old, and he was a follower of Gandhi. So Gandhi was a very successful revolutionary in India. And he had managed to challenge the British, who had been ruling India for more than 200 years, and systematically obliterating the Vedic culture as much as possible through propaganda. So Gandhi was successful in defying the British by nonviolent means. For example, the British would force their colonial subjects in India to buy salt from them. So Gandhi marched to the sea and dried the seawater and made his own salt so he wouldn't have to support the British. And when the British would export all the cotton grown in India to the mills in Manchester and then make it into cloth, then sell it back to the Indians for huge profits, Gandhi broke that cycle by encouraging the use of the spinning wheel, which is, I believe it's an emblem on the Indian flag, isn't it? Or it's the chakra. The chakra. Oh, okay. In any case, this was one of his ways of defying the British. So this was all very popular with the young people because they were... young people are more open to revolutionary ideas, let's put it that way. So Prabhupada, as a staunch Gandhian, met his guru for the first time, and his guru immediately said, "You're an educated young man, you speak English, you should teach this Krishna consciousness in the Western countries." A rather bold statement for somebody you've just met. But that was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. But Prabhupada was feisty, and he immediately argued back. "Who's going to listen to us as long as India is a subjugated country? First India must become independent, then people will listen to our knowledge." So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta replied that the movement of Krishna consciousness is not dependent on the political situation in India. It is a transcendental event for the life of everybody, a transcendental revolution that anyone in the world can experience, and that has nothing to do with any external political situation. So Prabhupada said, "I was rarely defeated, but I was defeated in this debate by that that answer. But this defeat was a great victory for me," he said. So this is another thing about Srimad Bhagavatam. It will defeat our conceptions about life, about ourselves, about society. But that's a great victory. It's a defeat that sets us free. It breaks all the conceptions about our cultural, ethnic, economic, political views by completely examining life from the spiritual perspective. And that is the that was the mission that Bhaktisiddhanta bestowed on Srila Prabhupada that he did so well. So any comments or questions on this much? If not, yes, John?
Of the separation of church and state, I can understand why people would not want to have, you know, public prayer or prayer in the schools, anything like that. Because imagine if it were flipped and then, you know, ISKCON had its influence in the schools, which I'm pretty sure would not be the case. But say it was like, you know, okay, every morning before class you have to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. I'm from North Carolina, and people there would certainly have a problem with that. So how would you respond to that?
Srila Prabhupada said that the responsibility of the state is not to propagate any one particular faith, but to propagate spirituality in general. That means whatever faith, whatever way one may choose to make his expression of spirituality is fine. But it is the state's obligation to see that, A, it is done, and B, those who are representing a particular faith are doing so accurately. So they, just as they have meat inspectors to uphold the integrity of the product of the slaughterhouse, you know, the government pays for that. So similarly, the government should pay for people to referee spiritualists and say, okay, is this person actually walking the walk? You know, are they actually qualified to help others spiritually? Because it is a fact that people who are God-conscious, even if their faiths are different, there is a natural bonding. You know, if it is a real case of cheating religion, where people have a totally materialistic idea about religion, they won't bond with spiritualists. They'll consider them, you know, fanatics, occultists, or whatever. But people actually developing saintly qualities through this faith or that faith, there's a natural bonding. Yes, Rupa Chandra Prabhu. Let's hear from the religion department on this point.
Actually, I've been doing quite a lot of research on this whole idea of secularization, and it's the same problem in parts of Southeast Asia, which like Indonesia and to an extent even Singapore, which were traditionally had some kind of a religious background, at least in the formation of the state, especially Indonesia. And I saw this magazine of how the education system, because they're not no longer glorifying God, it's just promoting promiscuity and all kinds of moral values are going down. And what's happening is that basically the excuse they use in Singapore is that, okay, you know, we want to have religious harmony. So the best way to have it is don't talk about religion. Let's not have these discussions about debate. So just keep it outside, keep it in private domains. In the public space, it's all going to be secular. So, but as a result of that, you have, you know, like just outside a temple, for example, at the bus stand, you have an advertisement on McDonald's, on beef, and, you know, advertisements promoting you know, illicit sex and all of these things. So you cannot have a vacuum. You have to fill it up with something else, and that's usually garbage under the name of secularism. But like what Prabhu said, I think the solution, real secularism means that you create an environment where the principles of religion can be followed, for example, cleanliness, austerity, mercy, and so forth, and nonviolence, so that all the religions can actually practice their respective faiths as much as possible without offending one another.
Can anyone recite that verse that we learned last week? The verse of the week from the first canto, anyone remember? Savai. Very good. So this is the answer to the first question raised by the sages at Naimisharanya. What is the greatest principle of spirituality? And in response, Sutta Goswami says, the topmost paro dharma for all humanity is that by which people can attain to love of God. Okay? He doesn't say, it's Krishna. You know, isn't that interesting? Such an ecumenical answer. He doesn't say, oh, it's Krishna, that's it, everything else is garbage. Yeah. But he says, whatever spirituality will help you develop love of God. Because if you love God, there's no depression, there's no anxiety, there's no competition, you know, there is just contentment and tolerance and compassion, all the good qualities. So your point's well taken. These things need to be promoted by the government. And to get a little more specific, we could say the four regulative principles. If, for example, if beef were taxed in America, what a great boon that would be. Just like gasoline is taxed heavily. Or a better example is tobacco. You know, when it discovered that tobacco was so bad for the health, then the government began taxing it. I'm old enough to remember when there were commercials on television with doctors. Doctors were smoking and they say, I recommend this brand of cigarette. And gradually, it became evident that, wow, smoking was killing people. So the government changed its tune, and now it has to be warnings, and there was this huge lawsuit against the tobacco companies, et cetera, et cetera. Still a quarter of Americans smoke. Go figure. But this is a way to control activities that are dangerous for people. That's the responsibility of the government, you see. So is not smoking appreciated by most religious people? Yes. Regardless of their faith, yes. It's generally recognized as something that is good for a person to avoid, right? So that's an example of what the government can do to promote spirituality. So when that comes to the point of meat eating, which we may see, know, slowly, slowly. They just discovered that eating eggs is as bad for your heart as smoking. So gradually, if it came to the point where beef were taxed, just imagine, first of all, you could get so much money for the government because people are so addicted to it. Right? Secondly, it would stop, it would reduce the cow slaughter. And third, it would reduce global warming because the meat industry is the number one source of greenhouse gases, more than all the transportation of mankind combined, according to the study by the United Nations. Yeah, so the environment would improve, people's health would improve, the economy would improve just by this one thing. So why doesn't the government do it? Because they don't have a clue about what spirituality is. See? So, thank you. Any other comments? Pratik?
Vishnu, the way I see this is that within the constraints of all these vote banks, governments cannot do much. In India, it's not possible to tell the prayers. It's not possible because we have six, seven religions there. It will not be possible. And to tell people to give up beef, it's like it's the taste of the tongue. They or for that matter, any non-vegetarian food, it's not possible. You cannot get up that. The only solution is like the way which we are following here. The government should be positive about allowing us to distribute prasadam more and more, like the way we are doing from the Krishna house. So thousands of people are taking, and then they find maybe the higher taste. So since we cannot allow prayers, the state cannot do that, but at least they can be more favorable in allowing us to give more and more prasadam to people. So once they get the higher taste, and with the prasadam, their sins are also getting lowered. Then, I mean, they can give up these things.
Yes, if the government, in other words, would encourage prasadam distribution. This is your point, a positive rather than the negative. Yeah, just to underscore your point, just this last week I got two requests for Krishna Lunch catering, one for the Swamp Con, which is the big video game conference in January. With anyone ever attended that? They say there are 3,000 or 4,000 people, and they want us to cater for it. And then the Swamp Symphony at Homecoming. I don't know what that is either. But the guy who's in charge of that wrote, can you please cater that? So people are automatically asking. They appreciate what we have to offer with Krishna Lunch. This is a good point, emphasizing the positive. And this is what Prabhupada said. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta sent his disciples to Europe to try to introduce Krishna consciousness in the West. They weren't successful. But he told them, if need be, you can serve meat, if that's what people are accustomed to eating. Such a strict sannyasi as Bhaktisiddhanta said this. So the point is that to introduce a spiritual revolution is not a matter of externals. If we can touch people's heart by our behavior, then they'll automatically be attracted and change. Last comments? Yes, Chaitanya.
You were talking about how Srila Vyasadeva, he was lamenting that point when Narada Muni came in and told him to write about Krishna's pastimes. And people always ask me, how do you know that Srila Vyasadeva, he's writing these things, compiling them? But how do we know that these are the exact things that are going on? Like he's just compiling them. So where is he getting them from?
The Bhagavatam describes how in the previous ages people's memories were so sharp that there was no need to write down anything. You could hear one time and remember for your entire life. Still there are people who have that ability, rarely today, called Shrutidhar. But one of the symptoms of the age of Kali is a short memory. And foreseeing this, Vyas wrote down all that was formerly preserved in the oral tradition. So this is the internal explanation of why he was writing. How do we know they're accurate? Well, in fact, certain books like the Mahabharata are not accurate because there are so many different editions. And culturally, they've kind of accumulated over the years. But the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita are very consistent. In other words, there is a set baseline. Therefore, this is called the spotless Purana, Amala Purana. there's no controversy about what it says. You see my point? Similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's not a big controversy. Oh, the Bhagavad Gita says this. No, it says that. This edition is the right one. No, this edition is the right one. That's not an issue as far as the Sanskrit is concerned. It's totally consistent. Everyone accepts these are the same 700 verses. What is different is the interpretations. And Srila Prabhupada's presentation of the Gita, because it was presented without interpretation, as it is, has created a spiritual revolution in the lives of so many millions of people. Prior to the Bhagavad Gita as it is, there were 700 editions in English and not a single devotee of Krishna in the Western world. But after his publication of Bhagavad Gita as it is, there was a whole spiritual revolution. All right, I hope that answers your question. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.